This show is listener supported. You're listening to Adoptees On, the podcast where adoptees discuss the adoption experience. This is season 4, episode 5, Jane. I'm your host, Haley Radke. Today's show is a bit of a sensitive topic. We are talking about genetic sexual attraction, which is commonly referred to as GSA. Because of the nature of the topic, I actually invited two different guests to share with us today. So the first is going to share her personal experience with being in a GSA relationship. And because of that sensitive nature, we're going to be altering her voice to give her some privacy. And we've also removed identifying details. Secondly, I've asked a friend of mine, Leslie Pate McKinnon, who is an adoption competent therapist, to share her expertise on this topic. And so I will introduce her and her credentials just a little bit further along in the show. So first, we're going to hear from Jane. She's going to share her story with us. And then we'll transition in to hear from Leslie with her advice on the topic. And we end the way we always do with recommended resources. I think you're going to laugh a little bit with me today because Leslie and I recommend the same resource. And I wanted to leave it in so you know that both her and I give it the thumbs up. So sorry for the double up there, but I think it's worth leaving in. Let's listen in. I am so pleased to welcome to Adoptees On, Jane. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, Haley. Thanks for having me.
I'm so pleased to talk with you today. I'm just really, I'm kind of nervous. I'll be honest. I'm a little nervous because I just want to take great care with your story. And I just think you're really brave for wanting to share it. And I know it's coming from a place of wanting to be there for other people who may have experienced similar things and are feeling alone. So I just want to commend you for that in advance. How about that?
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Well, why don't you start out just telling us what part of your story you would like to begin with?
I guess I'll start at the very, very beginning. I was a private adoption at only a couple of days old, and I grew up as an only child. I always felt like an outsider in my adopted family and did a lot of daydreaming about my birth family. So I always knew that I would search, and finally, in my late 20s, I met my birth mom and subsequently met two birth siblings and formed a relationship with all of them, and I'm still in reunion with them. And oddly enough, though, when I met them, I didn't feel a really strong connection. We've always gotten along well enough, but I still felt like something was missing. And it wasn't until I met my birth father about a decade after I met my birth mom that I finally felt like I had found the missing piece. I finally felt like I belonged. And I finally felt a resonance with somebody. So that was very profound for me. And then it was at that point that I found out that I had a half-brother that was only a couple months younger than me. And I wasn't aware of that until that point. So it would still be almost another decade before I would meet him, my brother.
So obviously on the paternal side, because a
yes.
couple months. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. your dad was busy. Okay.
Yes, he was.
Okay.
So I knew that I knew about my half brother, and I knew that he knew about me, but I also knew that he was going through a big move and family changes, and so I wasn't expecting to hear from him. And then out of the blue one day, I got this phone call from him. And so the following week, he and his kids came for a visit, and it was yet another one of those moments similar to what I experienced when I met my birth dad, that I felt like, wow, oh my gosh, I know this person. And our connection was just easy and I've never experienced anything quite like that before. I felt seen by him. Subsequently, we visited each other probably a couple times over the next 6 months or so. We ended up talking a lot on the phone, really getting to know each other, developed a friendship, I would say, and discovered a lot of similarities in personality and emotional processing. And it was, again, the first time that I really felt like I was connected with somebody in a way that I didn't even have to necessarily explain. So that held its own power. I would say probably about a year after we met, we ended up spending quite a bit of intense time together. And we were on a cross-country trip together. So, you know, we were spending a lot of time together and really enjoying each other's company. And it became obvious that we were both struggling with stronger emotions than we were prepared for. The connection that we had formed was one that is bigger than I think anybody expects to make. Under normal circumstances, siblings would grow up with each other and know each other. And here we were meeting as adults for the first time and realizing this intense DNA connection that we had was very powerful. And I can speak for myself. I was struggling with a feeling of really wanting to be close to him. Like I wanted to touch his skin and his voice. Like I would, just the tone of his voice, I couldn't wait to hear it on the phone. I really spent quite a bit of time being puzzled by my intense desire to be so close to him in a physical way and didn't really know what to make of that. And then when I realized he was also having a similar experience, that really shocked me because I just thought that it was me. And yeah, on that trip, we just really acknowledged where we were, and that changed the course of our relationship.
Can I ask what relationship status you guys both had? Like, you said he had a couple kids. Did you have partners?
And no, we didn't. We're both divorced, and we both have kids that we share with our partners, and we're single parents, and neither one of us are in a serious relationship either with anyone. And we haven't been, just for the period of time that we've known each other for the most part. So
you were on this cross country trip for an extended period of time. And that's when the feelings kind of like got really big and you shared with each other that you both had mutual feelings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. After the trip, I got home and just was, especially, you know, after I could get away from the situation, reality set in, and I thought to myself, what in the world is going on with me? Am I losing my mind? And so, of course, I went to the internet, and I don't even remember what search words I put in because I didn't even know what to say, but genetic sexual attraction came up, and I just remember being wowed that there was even a term that existed. And the more that I read, the more I realized that that is what we were experiencing to some degree. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of information out there about it. I have only been able to find one scientific research study about it that supports the phenomenon, the existence of GSA. Beyond that, it's mostly anecdotal evidence, but nonetheless important. And definitely, I think, illustrates what adults who are meeting for the first time, who were separated in childhood, what can occur, what they can possibly experience.
So what happened with your relationship?
It's been a lot of up and down. We've had discussions about, you know, how we should move forward. We've tried to ignore our feelings. We've tried to not talk about them. We've tried to suppress them. We've tried to not talk to each other for a while. and really, none of it works. And it just makes both of us end up feeling yicky inside. And when I stopped to really think about it, I realized that what was forcing us to consider suppressing it was the cultural norms that we live in, and the shame and potential humiliation of a situation like this being exposed to people who wouldn't or couldn't understand it. And that's the fear. And so I think that was the motivation for trying to, I don't know, undo it and try to somehow, you know, have a connection that isn't that intense. But I think that's impossible at this point. And I've done some counseling around the situation and have had a really supportive and understanding counselor who has helped me realize that, yes, I do have a secret, but I also have a sacred. And this is a very sacred relationship to me and something that's very unique to both of us that I actually feel really blessed and lucky that we've been able to experience together.
So from a outsider's perspective, how do you explain it to someone? Like, have you told anyone else besides your counselor? I mean, just as you said, there's this like societal feeling of ickiness and like that this is not a normal experience, and especially just talking about it in the world. I mean, most people are just like, whoa, this is not okay.
Right. Right. And I understand that feeling because, you know, if I hadn't experienced it firsthand, I don't know how understanding I would be either. I think I would definitely be scratching my head. I did share my experience with a good friend of mine who, of all the people that I thought might be able to listen to me and view the situation without judgment, I thought it would be her. And that was a rude awakening. She was unable to hold space for me in that way. And I felt very ashamed after that. And I think that was what really started me trying to suppress this and say to him, you know, we need to turn the volume down on this. You know, this isn't going to be okay. And I lived with a lot of guilt about that and some shame. And she made it very clear she never wanted to talk to me about it again, which made it even harder to have to deal with that, I guess, in terms of my relationship with her. But I'm now at a place where I realize I need to stand in my truth. And this is my experience. And really, the more that I understand why this happens, how it can happen, I don't feel that shame and humiliation and guilt that I did at one point. And I actually, at this point, have a reverence and a respect for the connection that I have with my brother.
What's the current state of your relationship with him? Like, what do you call yourselves to each other? And are you just in a deep friendship? Is it more than that?
I would say first and foremost, we're in a deep friendship. We talk regularly and our conversations are not of the superficial type. We're very vocal with each other in terms of our commitment to each other just as people. You know, we know that we will be there for each other for till the day that we die. And that's, I have to say, is something that I've never experienced. So that's comforting and powerful. We see each other, I don't know, maybe, you know, a couple times a year. And when we do, it really depends on whatever is going on at that point. So the intensity varies. But first and foremost, though, we are friends.
And I imagine that because you've you both have your kids and your families and stuff, that they're in relationship too with him, right? And so one else would know that this is this intense sort of feelings is like in the background.
Yes. Like everybody knows that we're close and you know, our friends and family have been very supportive and happy with our connection. You know, there's a lot of support around us for our reunion and for our connection. And I think people see that we have something special, but no, they don't know the intensity of that specialness.
So before we started, you mentioned to me that you were an only child and you thought maybe this has something to do with this.
He and I have talked about that from a couple different angles. I mean, just for myself, I know that I always craved, is probably the best word, always craved a sibling. But one thing that I really want to point out that I find is interesting is, you know, when I met my birth mom, I have a half brother on that side who I have a fine Facebook Christmas card relationship with, but there's never been that wow connection with him, you know. It's fine, you know, we're good, but never anything like what I've experienced with this other brother. So at first, when I had this experience with Joe, I thought to myself, is it partly because I've been wanting a connection so badly that I'm like going overboard with it? But I realized, you know, my connection with Joe is just natural. Whereas, you know, my connection with my other brother is also natural, but it's very, very different. So I think that there is... it's not just a blanket thing, obviously. When, you know, two adults meet in reunion, it doesn't mean that you're going to have intense, feelings for each other or fall in love with each other. But it's just very, very different for me from one brother to the other, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
The other thing that my brother and I, another angle that we've talked about is the fact that he has a couple of siblings, but because of age and other things, he's never really had a close relationship with them. And of course, I don't have the experience of how to relate to a sibling either. And here we are meeting as adults. And then how in the world do you all of a sudden become brother and sister when you are both single, you're both attracted to each other, and you're both of similar age, and there's so much likeness? And usually that's what attracts people in general, is things that you find that are in common and likenesses. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening here. And it's like, what do you do with this? Is this the only real way that we can really express what's happening here? I don't know, but that's what a lot of people feel is the only way to feel bonded with each other. So I don't know. With only one research study that doesn't really go into the depths of what's behind GSA, I mean, we're still trying to figure out why we're sexually attracted to each other just in general, much less trying to figure out why siblings and parents and children would be attracted to each other.
Yeah, well, as I was trying to research this as well, because, you know, you're not the first person to reach out to me that's experienced this. And I don't know where to send people, because as you say, there's nothing. There's not much out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, reading a few different things that, you know, the anecdotal, basically.
Right.
But I really think there is something to what you just said about how we feel attraction in general.
Right.
Finding the commonalities. And, you know, you said that you process things emotionally the same. And I mean, goodness, to find that in a partner is so valuable and rare. And so that just is a whole nother layer, you know,
mm-hmm.
not just the chemistry kind of thing. When you have both, it's kind of like, whoa.
Right. Well said.
What's kind of your status in the world? Are you still looking for another partner? Are you happily single with this deep friendship? And I mean, I don't know. Where do you go from here?
Yeah. And that's something that we're still trying to figure out. I very much would like to be in a committed relationship with someone who I can actually walk down the street with and hold their hand and introduce them as my significant other. And so that's something that I'm still hoping that will enter my life. Joe knows that. He jokingly asks me when I'm going to give up, hoping that's going to happen. I tell him never. But, you know, it's interesting. We're at a point now where we're both dating, nothing serious, but we talk to each other about, you know, our experiences, and it's okay. Like, we're both helpful to each other. We're giving each other dating experience.
Dating advice?
Advice. Yes, which is kind of funny. So I would say that our relationship definitely does not fit any black and white kind of nice little neat boxes.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's going to be something that's going to be fluid. We've talked about potentially at some point in the future living in the same town and what that would look like. And if we both had found partners, how would all that look and how would that work? And we don't have all the answers for that. I used to stress about that, but now I'm at the point where I really just realize I'm just going with the flow, and we're going to figure it out. And the thing that I feel the most confident about is our connection and our feelings for each other and how much we care about each other. So no, that won't change.
All right. So there's someone listening who is experiencing something similar and hasn't told anyone and is feeling super ashamed and doesn't know what to do. What do you say to them?
I would say to be kind to yourself. To have empathy for yourself and what emotions and feelings you are going through, not to beat yourself up about it. And for me, knowledge is power. So for me, going online, and there's, again, not a lot out there, but I did find some documentaries that I found helpful. I found a couple of articles that I found helpful, and going to my counselor definitely helped a lot. So I would encourage that person to expand their knowledge about what they're experiencing instead of judging it.
Can you talk a little bit about your counselor, Jane? How did you find them and how did you bring it up? How did you bring it up to them?
Yeah. So she's actually not your typical psychotherapist. She is an energy medicine medical doctor. So she does somatic work. And I had seen her previously years ago. And I know she is a woman who has helped me before with some really tough things. And I felt like she was open-minded enough and kind enough. And I felt like she would be able to listen to me and hear me. At least I hope so. So thankfully I was right. And when I started to explain it to her, it seemed like she already knew what I was going to say. And by the time I got to the point of telling her about the cross-country trip, she said, of course that happened. Like, she was just not at all surprised whatsoever. And that made me feel a lot better. And so she's done some intense sessions with me just in terms of wrapping my head around my experience and really realizing that this is really a gift. It really is. I just wish that society as a whole could see it as that instead of something nasty and vile, because it's not. There's no victim here. You know, nobody's being betrayed or coerced or forced into anything. And there's a lot of love here. And that's a beautiful thing. And again, you know, growing up as an only child and feeling so disconnected from everybody until, you know, I'm in my middle age, like that's a gift in itself to have a connection with another human being like this. I feel really, really lucky. And I guess what I would say is that I would hope that other people would be able to get to that point too, you know, that they might be able to separate what society is telling us and, you know, the lens that they look at the situation through versus what it really is. And it's really two innocent people who are thrust into a situation that is unnatural for two people who are closely related to suddenly be meeting as adults. That's just not a normal experience. And so, you know, my guess is that with more recognition about this situation, that people will start to realize that this isn't so unusual. And I hope that it becomes more accepted and not criminalized.
Thank you so much for sharing, Gene. Let's do our recommended resources. So you mentioned that there's been a couple things that you found online that were helpful. So why don't you start and talk us through those couple things?
I had mentioned that when this whole thing happens and I put in my keywords and GSA came up, one of the first things that I read, thankfully, was an article that was published in The Guardian. And it's, I think, back from 2003. But it's a very thorough explanation of the phenomena of genetic sexual attraction. And it made me feel like I wasn't crazy. it made me feel like what I was experiencing actually made sense to somebody. So that article was super helpful.
Was there a quote in that article? I thought you maybe sent me one quote that you thought this really stuck out to you.
The quote is, GSA is a largely normal response to an extremely unusual situation, blood relatives meeting as strangers. And then in addition to that, GSA is neither a horror, an illness, nor a perversion. Indeed, given what we already know, might it eventually prove to be not that much of a mystery? I have to agree with that.
And they reference Barbara Gagneau.
Gagneau, yes.
Who is credited with coining the phrase genetic sexual attraction. Mm-hmm. And she has a book out, I'll link to that from, I mean, I think it was the 80s, where, so she is a first mother and she was attracted to her son when they met later on. I think he was 26 and she was in her early 40s. And she just described having these feelings of attraction for her son, but I don't know that they ever acted on it or even if she expressed them to him. I don't know because I've never read it, but I did read a couple of things about her. So mm-hmm. Yeah, this article in The Guardian is so good. And so it sort of branches off too for some more resources. Okay. And then there was a documentary that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, there was a documentary called Brothers and Sisters in Love, and that's on YouTube. Well done. It's a British documentary, I think, that came out a few years ago. And it follows a couple of different situations. That documentary also made me realize you can be 75 years old and meeting somebody for the first time and experience these feelings, or you can be 20. It does not matter. So there was some comfort in knowing that I wasn't alone in feeling this way.
Yes. Okay. So speaking of not feeling alone, I have been scouring the web, okay, to find some places for support that we could recommend. And one place that I have recommended before is the Adult Adoptee Support Forum. And they allow you to have a completely anonymous account. And then they have, so it's a forum, like old school, okay, internet forum with, you know, different discussion threads. And so when you join, there are levels of access. So once you've posted 10 times, you can access then this next section of forums. And then once you've posted 30 times, they have a variety of different, very private forums, one of which I believe is GSA. Mm-hmm. So that's one place I would recommend. And the other one that I found is called the GSAforum.com. Now, I haven't been in here, but it looks like it is fairly active. And they charge a fee per year. So it's $25 a year to join at the time we're recording. And I think that's US funds.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a way for them to keep out people who are curious or, you know, the gawkers and stalkers sort of thing. But what I really appreciated about their description, Jane, is they talk about you are not alone, which of course was the feeling that, you know, you were looking for. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. has anyone else kind of dealt with this?
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a broad range. So people who are sort of experiencing an attraction and don't know sort of what to do, to people who are in a relationship and are looking for support, people who have had a relationship fall apart and are looking for support, all the way to people who are quite happy in relationship and also would like to be involved in that systemic kind of change, changing society's perception. And they call it people who are in a this is their quote from their website, people who are in full-blown GSA relationship and are considering the work involved in normalization. So all of those different aspects. Also, they say that the other people that are welcome are people whose spouses are experiencing GSA, or friends or counselors who have clients experiencing GSA. So it seems like they get it.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it would be a safe space because you have to pay to be there. And I think it's quite reasonable, you know, $25 for a year. So those are two things that I found that I hope will be helpful for people. You know, because of the taboo of this, it's sort of, you know, if you're in a support group in person, I mean, it's hard for me to picture someone bringing this up and, you know, feeling comfortable enough.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm still thinking about, you know, you disclosing to your friend and her not just, yeah, don't talk to me about this anymore. I'm sorry that happened.
Well, you know, it needed to happen, I think, because it brought me back to reality. Like, this is not going to be something that the average person is going to understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody who hasn't been separated from a significant person in their lives and reunited with them, they just can't picture how
mm-hmm.
yeah. it just doesn't compute, doesn't make sense to them. So I guess I would say to people who it doesn't make sense to, please try to not pass judgment about it. That's all.
Thanks for sharing with us.
Thank you, Haley.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And it's a brave thing to share about. Leslie Pate McKinnon is a therapist and also a first mother. She has a great deal of experience working with families conceived through adoption, as well as third-party reproductive technologies. Leslie is an expert in this field. I have met her on two separate occasions and picked her brain about a couple of different things. She's just so wise in this area. And I trust her opinion very much. I asked her to come to speak to the topic of GSA because she has worked with clients in this area. And I think that you are going to find her insights very, very helpful. Let's listen into my conversation with Leslie. Leslie, I'm so excited to chat with you today. Thank you so much for your time. And I just really want to get into the topic I asked you to speak on is genetic sexual attraction. And, you know, I find it can be so sensationalized in the media, but what can you tell us specifically about the realities of genetic sexual attraction?
Well, Haley, it is a real phenomenon. And the unfortunate part about it is it brings with it so much shame. In other words, people who become attracted to each other then feel filled with shame because it may be their sibling, it may be their parent, and it's so foreign to them that I think one of the difficulties is we don't have a clear recording of how many people this hits. I have seen estimates that up to 50% experience some form of genetic sexual attraction. I can't tell you that I know it's that high, because in my practice, I would tell you that it was probably closer to 10%. But then again, I don't know who's not reporting to me, because they just feel like, wow, I must be some kind of a pervert. So I assume some people hold it back. So I think that's one of the things, is that we don't know quite how frequently it's happening, but it is definitely happening.
Yes. Well, I have had, of my thousands of listeners, I've had two reach out to me. And so I can't imagine how many have just have this, what they feel is a shameful secret, right? Do you have any advice for people that are experiencing this? Like, how can we reach out for support or even find a therapist that could understand or be helpful to us?
Well, there's a couple of things I'll say about a therapist. And of course, I'm biased because I are one. But one of the things I think that is so important is that people have preparation for reunion ahead of time and after time. Because I do lots of reunions with folks, even help with it on a television show, and I prepare people that there is this thing called genetic sexual attraction. That way, if it hits them upside of the head, they know what it is, and they can kind of calm down about it. Now, I will tell you, when I'm treating adolescents and I tell them ahead of time, they go, ew, that's weird. But I say, well, it won't happen to you. It's not going to happen to you, but it is my obligation to tell you about it. So preparation and then follow up on the other side in case it does hit. Now, what do we do about it? And one of the things I tell people is that we do not know, Haley, what adoption has done to us, literally, until we get into the stages of reunion, if we're lucky enough to do that. And then we begin to see that the damage was much deeper than we could ever know. I think a lot of what gets mistaken for genetic sexual attraction is a search for attachment. I use an example all the time of my own son, and the first time I visited at his home, I was just wired and I couldn't sleep. And I was laying on the sofa Sunday morning reading the funnies. And my son kept walking back and forth, Haley, up and down the hallway, across where I was sitting. And finally, I thought, what is he doing? And he stopped and he said, I'm just afraid this feeling is never going to go away. I have to say it out loud. And I said, what? And he said, I'm having the strongest urge to crawl into your lap and let you read me the funnies. I think it's attachment is the basis of what we're seeking. And it's like going back to the primal attachment that we didn't get to have. And of course, in our culture, if you start touching or, you know, feel these strong feelings and urges, we do tend to romanticize them. And then they do kind of move on into this. I think it can grow into what we call sexual attraction, because we're suddenly like, oh, that person thinks like me. Oh, they like to sail. They have the same sense of humor. And in our culture, that means I think I love you because you're a lot like me. So I think we just have to educate that it's, I believe, more about a need to reattach. And then certainly that can move over into a sexual arena. So preparation before, preparation after. Doesn't always happen that way. That most often doesn't. There are very few resources for genetic sexual attraction, but there is a website called gsaforum.com. And I think that's where people need to go. They'll find all kinds of other folks there struggling with it. And that forum will have in it whatever resources are available, which I acknowledge are not a lot, but at least they can talk with others online and find out that they're not nuts. They're not the only people going through this.
I was just going to say, I saw that forum. I didn't enter it, but It's awesome because they like charge a membership fee for the year, which is really reasonable. So you don't get like the looky-loos kind of thing. And they also said on there, they have the full range of like all the different people who are just sort of like experiencing, some people that are already in a relationship, some people who have gotten out of a relationship. Like, it's a big range. So wherever you are on that spectrum, you could find support for yourself there.
Yeah. And I always hate it when I can only say, well, you can go to the Chevy dealer or whatever. There's only one place. But that, at this point in time, is the most central location I think you can find. And this gives me a good place to throw in another factor that's very important to me, because my work is with families conceived through adoption. So that's why I always try to prepare folks that this could happen. But I also work with families conceived through third-party reproduction, and I think we are getting ready to see an explosion in this kind of situation, because so many people in third-party who were conceived through third-party reproduction have no idea that they were. It has operated up until now in the dark ages, just like adoption used to. And it's like, well, there's no need to tell them if you carried the baby. You know, you don't have to express this. This is what the medical profession tells people. It just makes me ill. But so now we're talking about thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who don't even know that there's any possibility they could be related to anyone outside their family, finding one another. And it is beginning to happen. And I think maybe then we'll have more resources for genetic sexual attraction, because I think it's a bomb about to explode. So that's one of my major concerns. There, in fact, well, this isn't third party. This is adoption. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a couple that's been on a lot of the sites that we adoption folks go to in the last month. They're in North Carolina, and it's a father who's 42, who after reunion divorced his wife and married his daughter, who's 20. They just had a baby, and they've been charged by the law with incest, which is really kind of interesting, because by the law, they're not related. Parental rights were severed, and that 20-year-old has a new set of parents. It's on her birth certificate. Doesn't that make it real? And so while they're charged with incest, legally, they haven't committed incest. Reality-wise, yes, they have. Situations like that are mind-boggling.
Oh my goodness, yes. So what do you say to someone, Leslie, that is maybe in a relationship like this and wants to get out of it? I don't know. Like, it's such a tricky thing. Like, I don't want to come down in judgment, but what are your options when you're in that situation?
I think that's the first thing, Haley, is we cannot shame a person for this. We need not shame a person for this. This is another one of the byproducts of adoption. Thank you very much. And is to be compassionate and understand and talk to them about what I usually say in my warning speech is, if you ever want to ruin your reunion, this is the best way to do it. So I try to let them know that it's not going to sustain over time. This will fall apart, and so will your reunion. And so you really want to look and see if you can move out of the active romantic piece of it, the active. You're going to have the feelings. Those may take a year or two or more to die down, but you don't want to act on them unless you're willing to say at some point in time the reunion's going to blow up. One of the keys about these feelings is, Haley, they are so intense, and that's the give for me. That's a giveaway. They are, if you thought you were intense when you were 15 and had a crush on somebody, you've never seen anything like it. And that's the key. That's why I think it stimulates a much more primal yearning. The person who's involved in it or people cannot forget about it, can't push it away. And So I have to work with them in a very cognitive way to say, well, let's not act on that feeling, but how can you talk about it, release some of the emotion around it? If I can get both parties in therapy, that's even better. So they can both talk about it, and maybe, you know, a rational brain will prevail at some point. But no shaming. This is not the person who's going through its fault in any way. This is because we disrupted the attachment process and the bonding process.
Well, thank you so much, Leslie. That is very wise. Do you have any last thoughts for us? Do you think we've covered everything?
Well, I think that finding a therapist that's adoption competent, I always say that for any issue you're having, reunion, you know, your family conceived through adoption, whatever, please figure out an adoption competent therapist. And there are ways to do it. There are things online, the questions you can ask them. I printed one, several people, packed out in California has printed an excellent questions you can ask people to find out if they're adoption competent. Because if you don't get one, you're very likely to be shamed for these kind of feelings because other therapists don't get it. I've done a support group for years, and I will tell you that I've had people in support group that never brought it up, but would make an individual appointment and come in and then talk about they couldn't figure out what was going on. But these people are laden with shame, and we already started out that way as adoptees and first parents. You know, shame is our middle name, so we don't need any more.
That's right. Wonderful. Thank you so much. I've really appreciated your time, and I miss hanging out with you. We've had quite a bit of fun in person, so.
I'm really thrilled that you called upon me, and I hope we'll see each other again soon, Haley.
If you'd like to connect with Jane, you can do that. She has set up an anonymous email address, and I will be happy to forward email onto her. So if you go to adoptiesonline.com/connect, you can use the email form there to send her a note, and I will forward that on to her for you. If you'd like to be in touch with Leslie, her contact information is at lesliepatemckinnon.com. Thanks again to Jane and Leslie for sharing with us today. Okay, friends, I am coming to San Francisco in May. On May 20th, we are having a Write or Die class with Anne Heffren in the afternoon, followed up by a Adoptees On podcast listener meetup. And I would love to meet you in person. If you live in the area or are within driving distance, or if you're hardcore and you're going to fly in from out of state, which I have a couple listeners doing that, which is amazing. If you want more details, it's adoptiesonline.com/events, or on our Facebook page, we have an events tab up there. Come and do Anne's class with me, Write or Die. Even if you're not a writer, if you don't feel like one, I'm not really a writer myself, but I really want to find some new ways of expressing my story. And I think that writing will be an especially healing way for me to do that. So I'd love to do that with you. This show is brought to you by my generous Patreon supporters. Thank you guys so much. I couldn't do the show without you. I have monthly donors who are supporting the production costs of the show, and they get access to a secret adoptees-only Facebook group. And there's other levels of support where we have some unedited episodes of the show that I record with Carrie Cahill Mulligan and a couple of other special guests. Though those are kind of fun chats that I maybe wouldn't want to go to the general public. So if you just can't get enough, that's another option for you. I also have amazing people that just send me one-time gifts as a surprise. And that has been so tremendous and helpful to cover the ongoing costs of producing the show. So thank you. If this is something that you believe in and you think is valuable and you'd like it to continue, would you consider partnering with me? Adoptiesonline.com/partner has the details, and I would love it if you would partner up with me and the future listeners of the show who have yet to discover it. Also, we'll say a big thank you to you for helping keep the show going. Last thing before we say goodbye, I would love it if you would share the show with just one person today. I think that Leslie's advice is invaluable, and hearing Jane's story will really resonate with some people, even if they've never expressed that they've experienced GSA. As Leslie said, up to half of adoptees in reunion have had some of these feelings. So I would love it if you would share this episode, and hopefully this episode will reach some of those people who are feeling very alone and ashamed and help them to reach out for support. Thank you for listening. Let's talk again next Friday.